But Steve Shoemaker is next.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith will be talking about the Intercultural Friendship Foundation that exists here at the University of Illinois. And our guests are Aziz Yoldashev, who's getting a master's degree in teaching English as a second language, and Barak Okumush, who's working on a PhD in biophysics. Welcome today.
Thank you so much.
Good to have you here. Barak, let's start with you. You're one of the founders of the Intercultural Friendship Foundation. Why did students and others want to start such a thing?
Well, when I came here to the United States 5 years ago in the 2000s, I was already well aware of the fact that Islam in Turkey was misunderstood in the United States and in the Western societies in general. And we used to talk about this among friends all the time. I'm sure many people have heard of the movie Midnight Express and how Turkey was depicted therein. And sometimes we got strange, some being even offensive questions. I still recall one that a friend of mine asked me, do you have computers in Turkey? And when you get questions like that, at first you're tempted to get angry for such an ignorance, but then I tried to look at the other side of the coin. Maybe it was our fault that we did not tell these people about ourselves enough, or we did not give them the chance to learn about us. So I guess we felt like we got to do something for this, but we were not sure about what to do exactly at the beginning.
How many students were involved? And was it only students or also faculty and other community people?
It was mostly students. I would say 5 to 6 graduate students, all Turkish graduate students who were involved in the first stages of the foundation.
And what did you do to start the organization? You must have brainstormed and threw out ideas and then thought that some kind of an organization would be helpful?
Yes. As I said before, we were not quite sure what to do about this. But actually, we're quite familiar with such issues like dialogue and tolerance in Turkey because, well, although 99% of the Turkey's population is said to be Muslim, I can say that the interfaith relations is observed as a part of the daily life in some areas of Turkey. And that's because of the cultural mosaic in Turkey, and that's the reminiscence of the Ottoman Empire, basically. For centuries, there has been Christians and Jews in Istanbul who lived there for generations. I remember my aunts had Armenian neighbors, and they had mutual visits once in a while.
How many people are there in Turkey, roughly?
70 million.
70 million.
I would say.
And what percentage are Muslim?
Said to be 99%.
Okay. So it's almost everyone.
Almost everyone,
but there's still
this
memory of times when the percentages were different.
Well, the percentages are, I would say, locally different.
Hmm.
Globally too, I guess, during the Ottoman Empire, there were lots of... the Balkans was in the rule of Ottomans, so mm-hmm. I guess the percentages were different. But still, I guess the majority was Muslims.
Now, how long have you been in this country?
It's been 5 years.
5 years, all the time here at the University of Illinois or elsewhere?
Yes, that's correct.
Were you an undergraduate in Turkey?
I was an undergraduate.
Where did you go to school there?
I went to school in Ankara.
Mm-hmm. And Aziz, so what about you? How long have you been in this country?
I just came here last summer, and I just started my studies and master's program in teaching English.
And where were you an undergraduate?
Originally, I'm from Uzbekistan, so I did my undergrad in Uzbekistan, which is a former Soviet Union republic, and we just got independent in 1991.
And how many people in your country?
There are about 24-25 million people.
And what is the religious breakdown breakdown in Uzbekistan?
Well, in Uzbekistan, predominant religion is also Islam.
Yes.
And most people, they are Muslims. Mm-hmm. And so, but we do share this different nationalities, especially in larger cities where we live next to Russians, we live with Tatars and many other nationalities.
But for both of you, coming to the United States of America was the first time you'd been in a country that was predominantly Christian.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what were some of the things you noticed, first of all, that were very different?
Well, it's an old memory for me, so maybe Aziz should start.
Ah, sure.
It's fresh.
That was your experience just last summer.
When I came here, well, many people were Christians, and now I do have lots of non-Muslim friends. And it was really interesting because people were quite friendly, and they were showing interest in my culture and in my religion. And they were asking lots of questions about my religion, lots of things they were not sure about. And this is actually what we mostly do in our association, this whole dialogue between people of different cultures, different nationalities, and different religious backgrounds.
So that's one of the things that's been set up by the Intercultural Friendship Foundation, ways to have these kind of discussions.
Yes.
With people of different faiths.
Yes, because we think if there is this mutual understanding among people of different backgrounds, especially different religious backgrounds, then the peace is closer in the whole world, and this is one of our goals.
Are Muslim countries in general less materialistic than the United States?
They were a lot less materialistic before. Of course, as the world is changing, and thanks to the process of globalization, now materialism is also influencing Muslim countries too. But what we think is that in life, there should be a place for materialism and a place for ethical values and religion too.
And Barak, as you think back on your 5 years in this country, when you wrote those first letters, or maybe they were emails even 5 years ago, mm-hmm. Back home, did you mm-hmm. say, what was your impression of the different the differences between coming from a Muslim country to one which is predominantly Christian?
I didn't remember myself complaining too much about being in a Christian dominant environment, really. I guess that was a different experience, and I can say that I had some Christian friends whom I really liked very much. And I still keep in contact with them, with some of them. Those things I really liked, and I was really amazed by the things that we share in common with the Christians. In terms of, well, of course, it's obvious that we have differences in terms of the belief, but the ethical values and some of the belief ideas, we have a lot of things in common, and that was really astonishing to find out.
Give me some examples of some of the beliefs that are held in common between perhaps Christians, Jews, and Muslims.
For example, the first thing that comes to my mind is, I guess Mother Mary. Respect Mary, the mother of Jesus, peace be upon him. And that was the very major thing. And the reason is maybe there's a chapter in the Quran about Mary. There is a whole chapter. And that was, in Christian's point of view, in the American's point of view, was interesting.
And, of course, in terms of sharing a belief in some sort of an ultimate power, ultimate deity, which for Muslims is Allah, for Christians mm-hmm. might use the word God, the Christians would talk about a trinity, which Muslims would not agree with. But there is that sense that there's an ultimate divinity.
Yes.
And Jews, of course, affirm that as well. What about the common ethical values? What are some of the things you've discovered in your dialogue, discussions with Jews and Christians and Hindus and others? What do you find in common in terms of ethics?
Well, as far as ethics is concerned, so this goes back to the times of our Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and the way he treated Christians and Jews. And whenever, for example, well, I recall an event where Prophet Muhammad, he stood when the funeral procession was going by, and then when another person told him that this was actually a Jew who died, he said, but this is a human being. And so, this is basic in Islam, to be tolerant and not to divide people according to whether they are Jews or Christians, because the main thing is whether they believe that God is one and they believe in the prophets. I mean, there are so many things that are common, that we all believe in God, and we believe in prophets, in holy books, in angels, in the afterlife. And we Muslims, we believe in, as Barak said, in Jesus, peace be upon him, and Virgin Mary. And I think this is the thing that we should start with. I think we should more ignore polemical arguments and focus more on common points.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith today with two representatives from the University of Illinois, both graduate students from the Intercultural Friendship Foundation. Barak Okumush is one of the founders of that, and Aziz Yoldashev is a current member. Both are Muslims, and we're talking about some of the activities of the Intercultural Friendship Foundation. We've needed to pre-record this Keeping the Faith program for broadcast this Sunday because of the Martin Luther King program at Krannert Center that I have an obligation to be present, where I have an obligation to be present. So these folks, these guests, kindly agreed to tape this program a few days earlier. So we will not be taking telephone calls today, and I regret that listeners won't be able to ask their own questions, but I'll do my best to try to reflect what I think listeners may like to hear. And we'll go back to our usual format next week with our guests on Keeping the Faith then. For now, let's continue our discussion about particularly Islam and where all the people who founded the Intercultural Friendship Foundation Muslims?
Yes.
And were most from Turkey?
They were all from Turkey.
All from Turkey. Okay. But now you've included other people.
We've included other people, I would say. We had members and close friends. Last year there was an American lady, Joanna, who helped us very much, especially with the Rumi discussions, and she was leading some of the discussions. We had a Mexican Christian friend, and now we have Aziz, and we have another Bengali friend who is also helping out.
Now, in terms of the Muslims who started this from Turkey, what specifically was the situation in Turkey that you felt required this kind of a group of, in order for people to understand what's going on in your country?
Well, we had this good experiences of the dialogue that I mentioned before between Jews, Christians, and the Muslims in Turkey. But there had been bad ones too. Well, not between those of the people from different faiths, but between Muslims and between people from the same families. And the reason for that was basically political. And in the late 1970s, there was a long-lasting fighting and conflicts between the youth of the right and the left wing. And 50,000 people from each side is said to die, and they died for nothing. And the ultimate result was a coup when the army took charge, and this was really devastating for Turkey for many years. And I guess around 1995, active efforts of dialogue started in Turkey. And these consisted of events where Christians, Jews, and Muslims had met. And of course, I should emphasize that there's more to the cultural variety than the different than the different faiths.
Sure.
And these gatherings also provided a platform for the conservatives and seculars, like Sunnis and Shiites, come together and share feelings. There were like Ramadan dinners or conferences which brought all these different people under the same roof to exchange ideas and understand each other. And, well, there's still much to be done maybe, but when at the moment many academicians and community leaders look back, they find all these efforts very important steps towards forming a more harmonious and peaceful society in Turkey. So basically, I guess to our part, we felt the necessity of doing such things, similar things, especially after, I would say, September 11 events.
How many Turkish students are here at the University of Illinois, roughly?
I think around 200.
And do you know how long students from Turkey have been coming to study in the United States? Is that a very long time?
Well, compared to other ethnic groups, I would say it's relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know the exact numbers on top of my head.
And do most graduate students who come to this country from Turkey to study at the universities here tend to study science, engineering, agriculture, those kind of things? Or is it a broad spectrum, including the liberal arts?
It's a broad spectrum, really. Well, the majority, you can say, is still engineering and science. But there are people in liberal arts.
Yeah. And does the nation of Turkey sponsor students to study here? Or is your way paid, or do you have to come up with the funds on your own?
The government does sponsor such like education abroad, especially in the United States, but that's not the case for everybody.
Uh-huh.
But there are special fellowships or grants and programs of the government which supports students.
What about for students and teaching English as a second language? Would you have support from Turkey, from your country, from Uzbekistan?
No, I came because I received an assistantship from my department.
So the department here at the university is providing some of the support for you. When the Intercultural Friendship Foundation began on this campus, what were some of its first activities?
I think our first activity was a panel discussion about September 11, and maybe that was the reason for that was maybe we were inspired, or I would say we were triggered by this tragic event to start this organization. So we probably said we should hold a forum about this, and some professors at the University of Illinois came and spoke, and some local Muslim community and Muslim and non-Muslim community shared their thoughts.
Where did you have the forum?
It was one of the classes at school.
One of the classrooms.
Of the classrooms. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And is the Intercultural Friendship Foundation a registered student organization here at the university?
Yes, it is.
So you can use university facilities.
Yes.
And what have been some of your most successful programs, forums, classes? How long have you been in existence as the IFF?
I would say 3 years,
three years.
Full years.
And what have been some of your most successful programs during those 3 years?
Well, We had a whirling dervishes event in Folinger in the, I think, 2003. The first performance was done on 2003. And we had a really good turnout there. Well, if you call it successful, but I guess people really liked it because actually people really liked it because it's a very different, I guess, experience for for Americans. Well, it's even different for people in Turkey too, because it's not very widespread in Turkey. It's just a very local thing. And besides that, we are inspired by Rumi's thoughts and his understanding of the dialogue and tolerance and the love, his emphasis on love. We're all affected by that as the members of Intercultural Friendship Foundation. We like Rumi's ideas, and we thought that the fact that people were exposed to some of the Rumi's ideas there was nice. And
for listeners who may not know, tell us a little bit more about who Rumi is.
Rumi is a scholar, is a famous Islamic scholar who lived in the 1500s. He originated, regions around now would be in Iran or Afghanistan, and he traveled around around the area, and then he came to Turkey, Konya. He settled down there and wrote many books, one of which is his famous Mesnevi. And still people are following his, people are reading his books and following his thoughts. So he's quite famous in Turkey.
And his emphasis on tolerance was quite startling for that time, wasn't it? When people from different cultures, different racial ethnic backgrounds, different religions were more likely to be fighting one another and very, very suspicious of one another than trying to communicate.
Yes, it indeed was. It indeed was.
He was really an important person because his ideas and his poems, they inspired lots of other Islamic scholars in history, and lots of his ideas serve as basis for lots of different activities and organizations. And for us, for example, one of his ideas is central, where he says that a truly pious person is like a compass with one foot well established in the center of the faith, Islam, and the other foot with people of many other nations. Mm. So by this idea, he said that even if a person is a Muslim, he should not only stick to Muslims and he should not talk to other people just because they are of different religion. We should be more tolerant and we should be open to other religions just because our God says so and our Prophet, peace be upon him, said so, and that's what Quran says.
On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking with Aziz Yoldashev, who was just speaking, who's getting his master's in teaching English as a second language, and Barak Okumush, who's working on a PhD in biophysics, both here at the University of Illinois, and both members of the Intercultural Friendship Foundation. We're not accepting phone calls today on this particular program for Keeping the Faith. This program has been recorded earlier. Since we're about halfway through the program, let me take just a moment to let listeners know about some of the events coming up in the Champaign-Urbana area that might be of interest to people who appreciate this program. At St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Urbana on Wednesday, January 18, the documentary At the River I Stand will be shown. This is a hour-long film chronicling the Memphis sanitation workers' strike back in 1968 and includes Dr. King's involvement. So it's very appropriate on the day this program is broadcast on Martin Luther King weekend to highlight this program. The film will be shown, and then there'll be a discussion of the role that people who are motivated by their own religious commitments had in that strike and in fighting against poverty and inequality. Ron Peters, Professor Emeritus of Labor Relations, and Michael Jeffries, Director of the University of Illinois Minority Student Affairs Programs, will be leading that discussion. It'll be in the Parish Hall of St. Patrick's in Urbana at Main and Kohler Streets, open to the public, of course. It's sponsored by the Social Action Committee of St. Patrick's Parish. So that's that film and discussion. The film At the River I Stand will be January 18, Wednesday, from 7 to 9 p.m. at St. Pat's. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. I'm director of the University YMCA. The Y is one of the sponsors of Keeping the Faith programs. The Y is the oldest religious institution at the university. It was started back in 1873, and since that time has been helping develop student leaders by providing opportunities for social action and community service, providing forums for discussion. And although the Y was began as a Christian organization, indeed a evangelical Protestant Christian organization, over the years it's become open to other Christians than Protestants, Catholics and Orthodox, and people of other faiths, Jews and Muslims and Hindus and many others, Buddhists, and students who have no religious commitment but who wish to be involved in working on social issues such as problems threatening the environment, our natural order, as well as issues of poverty and justice. If you have any questions about the Y or its programs, please check out our website, University YMCA. .org will let you see what some of our programs are. Our first Friday forum will be coming up February 3rd with William Schultz, who's the executive director of Amnesty International, speaking at the Y on noon, February 3rd. Well, let's get back to our guest today. We're delighted to be talking about the Intercultural Friendship Foundation here on Keeping the Faith. We're talking with Barak Okumush and Aziz Yoldashev, and let me repeat, we're not accepting calls today. This program has been pre-recorded. So the IFF in its 3 years has done a lot of different programs. Aziz, just this year you've gotten involved. What attracted you to this program?
Well, the idea that tolerance is necessary in today's world and interfaith dialogue, these were the first things that attracted me, and I just wanted to be involved in something besides than my studies. And so we organized Ramadan dinner, and we organized it last year during the holy month of Ramadan, and it was the second time we organized such an event, and we invited some distinguished speakers, and it was a very nice event. We received very positive feedback from people, and we invited not only Muslims, but we invited Christians and we invited Jews too. And our speakers, they were both Christians, and they were, for example, last year we had a Muslim speaker, professor from the Indiana University, Zainab Istrabadi. And then we had professor, the director of religious program here at the University of Illinois, Professor Robert McKim. And we had another speaker who is a scholar at the Lutheran School of Theology here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Professor Michael Shelley. And he spent more than 20 years in Egypt. And so he talked about his experiences and his exposure to Islam and what it was like to live among Muslims. So it was both very interesting and very rich in knowledge and the information gave an event.
Now, do you get support and encouragement from the Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center that's here in Urbana?
Yes, we do. Actually, when we tried to reach people for this Ramadan dinner, well, this is one of the examples. We got a lot of help from CIMIC, the mosque here. And because the mosque here was also involved in such activities, was involved in community events and such, they knew a lot of people, obviously. And we, of course, wanted non-Muslims be together with Muslims. We needed some Muslims to be there. So that was also one thing, that we just invited people from the mosque. And they were really happy to come and see this in progress, that Muslims were organizing this platform for the interfaith dialogue and means for tolerance.
Now, both of you have spoken strongly about how important a value, an ethical value, tolerance is for you. But within Christianity, for example, I know that there are many, there's a wide range of opinions about tolerance, and some Christians are not very tolerant, as you both well know. And of course, fundamentalists within any religion sometimes are not tolerant of folks from other faiths. How much of a spectrum is there in Islam, in for example, Turkey, Barak?
Well, I guess you're right in the sense that, well, even in Turkey, when these dialogue events were done, people who organized these events were criticized for taking non-Muslims as their friends, you know. So there's even this spectrum of Muslims in Turkey who did not like this very much. But I would say, in general, people are quiet, open-minded about the idea of living together with Muslims and Jews and other, well, even non-believers. I guess that comes from the fact that they lived there side by side for many years. But there are still some of these people who are not in favor of such dialogue, and they don't like the term, the idea of tolerance, very much.
What about your experience in this country, particularly at this university? Are other Muslims generally in agreement with you that this is a good thing to do, to set up something like the Intercultural Friendship Foundation and sponsor these dialogues and discussions?
Yeah, all of my friends who are Muslims, actually, I haven't seen any of them who would say that dialogue is not what is what Islam is about, or this is not something which is included in the Holy Book, Quran, or anything like that. And it often happens that such misunderstandings often result from misinterpretation of the Quran. If we take, for example, the idea, people of the book, Ahl al-Kitab, this is mentioned in the Quran 24 times. And in different contexts, it has its own meaning. What we should do is to look at all of them all together and then come to conclusion. But what some fundamentalists do, they just take one mentioning of this term, and then they base their thoughts only on this particular example. And this is not correct, actually. And the way you should do is to interpret this in a wider sense. And this is actually, it involves not only religion, it is also about culture too. And this is why actually we decided to name it Intercultural Friendship Foundation, which would involve a lot more things rather than a religion only.
Let me follow up a little bit on the topic you just brought up, which is interpreting the Holy Book, the Quran. Since in Islam there's not a hierarchy of clergy or there's no pope, there are no bishops. There are teachers, there are ayatollahs, there are imams, but each individual Muslim can interpret the Quran as they will. Is that accurate, or is there some kind of a standard?
What most scholars agree on is that there are certain things that are firmly established in Islam, and there can be no doubts about it. And there are other things that should be interpreted. And these and sort of things, as for example, interfaith or dialogue between people of different religions, these are the things that are more or less open to interpretation by people. And well, due to different reasons, sometimes it's due to ignorance or lack of knowledge about a certain topic, the misinterpretation often comes out.
Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm curious about is what happens within Islam when one group of people, say fundamentalists, start interpreting, as you mentioned, the one passage in the Quran about who are the people of the book and who aren't, in a very negative way, in a very dangerous way, a violent way even. Is there within Islam a method to challenge that, to say, no, you're wrong, you're not looking at all these other passages, or does that not happen?
That's actually a very, well, interpreting the Quran is, I would say, has been done so in at the scholar level for many centuries that you are encouraged to make your own interpretation and read the Quran from the original text as well as the translations. If you do not know Arabic, obviously you need to read the translation. But of course, as you read the translation, many of the meanings are lost. So that is something that should be kept in mind, and that is always emphasized and remembered to people who read the translations. So there's some other sort of interpretation of the Quran which gives actually a very extended translation, but within that translation, the details of the nuances of the words that is used in the Arabic text is given. The reason for that particular chapter or verse to be revealed is given, like what was happening at the time of the Prophet and what happened to Prophet, so why that verse was revealed. These are very important things. And the scholars agree on the fact that if you want to know about, if you want to learn about something from the Quran, let's say, okay, I'm curious about what the Quran says about the people of the book, so I'm going to go ahead and take a look at the Quran. So you are encouraged by the scholars that you look at all the verses about the people of the book, then make your interpretation and read the previous interpretations that were made. So all these very firmly established interpretations actually say that there is nothing wrong with having dialogue and good relation with the people of the book. So one scholar can come up and say and tell these people that, oh no, you're interpreting this wrong because the Quran obviously says this. And I guess that is very well established. But of course, at the very end, people like to believe what they want to believe, sure. Right? So, I guess
it's interesting that your description of Islam, in that respect, sounds a lot more like Protestant Christianity than, for example, Orthodox or Catholic Christianity, where there is a hierarchy and a magisterium in the case of Catholics. Where an authoritative interpretation can be given of the scripture and of the church history, Whereas Protestants, if one little group goes off and says, this is how we read the Bible, this is what we think it means, whoever chooses to follow them can, and they might go off and do all manner of strange things in the name of Christianity. So that's an interesting parallel. Let me just repeat that this program has been pre-recorded, so we're not asking for callers to ask questions or make comments today on the air. We will revert to our regular custom next week, January 22nd. This program being broadcast today on Martin Luther King weekend has been pre-recorded. Our guests are Aziz Yoldashev, who's a master's student at the university, and Barak Okumush, who's a PhD student, both members of the Intercultural Friendship Foundation, that's particularly interested in relations between religious faiths and different cultures, particularly as it relates to the country of Turkey, where many of the founders of this organization 3 years ago came from. In talking about Islam and the Quran, when you came to this country and there wasn't a call to prayer five times a day that's resounding throughout the community, when there wasn't a number of other people to be bowing and praying with, if one of those prayer times comes when you're between classes or away from the mosque, how did you feel? Did you feel isolated? Did you feel vulnerable, particularly since there was a lot of anti-Muslim feeling in this country, particularly after 9/11?
I did hear that there were lots of anti-Muslim opinions and the negative behavior toward Muslims after 9/11. And I was expecting some negative attitude towards myself. But when I came here and when I saw that all people, which were mostly Christians, they were really, really friendly towards me, and especially when I said that I'm a Muslim and they started showing their interest as if this fact sparked off their interest and they started asking questions about everything. And I would tell them about our traditions and about our customs, especially during the month of Ramadan, when people would ask me, how is it possible? Can you manage to, you know, not to eat from sunrise to sunset?
Or drink water.
Well, the thing is that it's not only about, you know, it's not about being hungry or being thirsty. It's about avoiding evil thoughts too, and it's about...
Which is even harder, sure.
Which is, well... this is just, you know, to prove how much you believe in God and how much you decide to follow what he says. Mm-hmm. And
what about you, Barak? Did you find it difficult in a very different culture where there wasn't that sort of support from other Muslims, hundreds and thousands of Muslims in Turkey who'd be praying at the same time? Did you find it difficult to practice your faith here?
Not really, but I must say that I really miss the call for prayer too much. I mean, that's a personal thing, mm-hmm. but that's one of the things that I really miss a lot. But I did not really have any negative like attitudes towards myself. I didn't feel that. Maybe I'm one of the lucky people who didn't feel that in the States. And I guess that is part of the fact that I'm in this town, which is a university town, and people are open-minded and they are used to living with other people from different backgrounds. So I was not very, it wasn't very difficult for me.
I think you're right about the attitude in a university town. The University Y, for example, in its 133 years here, has worked hard to welcome international students and people from other faiths. And in fact, the Y started the programs that that now the university provides for international students. There are the welcomes, the various receptions, the dinners where people from mm-hmm. different cultures yes. and countries can get to know one another. So the Y has tried to be a leader in this community, but I know 5 miles away or 10 miles away, there are small towns where people may be very narrow, yes, and where people may be very negative and suspicious and even hostile to folks from other countries, people of who aren't Caucasian, and to people of other faiths. But even in Champaign-Urbana, a lot of the Christian majority are very evangelical. They feel that it's important for them to witness to someone who's of a different faith and try to persuade them that Christianity is something they should choose. Have you had that experience in this country?
I had an experience, yes. I had a friend who was, you know, coming to my place. I was going to his place. We were visiting. And once, well, all of a sudden he started telling me about the Christianity, and you know, it was obvious what he was trying to do, sure, actually. But that, I guess, when we mention about dialogue, I think we mentioned that in the dialogue, the terms, the ideas must not be controversial, because if you start talking about Christianity, then I start talking about about Islam, and I guess it's not possible for, you know, if you like, converting people with such discussions, because eventually they tend to turn into debates, mm-hmm, rather than useful communication and discussions.
Well, there is that motive in at least some parts of Islam, isn't there, also to try to convert other people to the Muslim faith?
Yes, yes.
And so are Muslims eager to do that in their dialogues with Christians or Jews?
Well, I guess that shouldn't be the first emphasis. I mean, okay, there are incidences, I guess, that people through dialogue chose different faiths. Maybe that happened for the Muslims as well. Like, they maybe some Muslims converted to Christianity. I'm not sure about the exact numbers or the comparisons of the ratios, but what I feel is that must not be the first motive of the dialogue, because it is not very sincere, right, to do this dialogue efforts in as a means of converting people, but rather maybe we should we can learn from each other. That actually, I want to give an example to this, that from the Christian ideology or Christian school of thought, I would say we have a lot of things that is told in the Islamic literature. And in one of the books I came across with this, and I heard this many times before. The fact that Jesus once said to a bloodthirsty crowd, which were trying to prosecute a sinful woman, "Let he who is without sin cast the first stone." I guess that's from John. And like, this is very inspiring for us to be, well, in terms of tolerance too, like how tolerant and loving we should be. And I guess we have a lot of things to learn from other faiths, from Christians as Muslims. And we believe that while they have a lot of things maybe to learn from us, well, we can basically learn from each other by discussing about these things, not on the level of you know, making debates or on the about the controversial issues, but the ethics that we share, the beliefs that we agree about. I think we can learn from each other.
Before we started pre-recording this program for broadcast today on Martin Luther King weekend, you were telling me about some people from America who went to Turkey and some of the things that they learned that were surprising. Can you tell me what some of those things were when they visited this country that's 99% Muslim?
Yes.
What were some of their surprises?
Well, actually, it was, well, when I watched this documentary and when I listened to their opinions before they went to Turkey, I was a little bit stunned because these were people, well, among them was a doctor in New Orleans, two professors in religious studies, and an ESL instructor at the University of Oklahoma, a computer engineer in Texas, Austin. Well, they sounded like quite educated people.
Sure.
And I was very surprised to see, to hear their opinions about Turkey, that most of them were really hesitant to go there. Like, one was saying, oh, you mean Turkey in the Middle East? Mm-hmm. You want me to, when they, well, her friend who was Turkish invited her to go to Turkey. She said that. And one said, well, my friends told me that I would be beheaded, even, you know, to that level. And they were really questioning what they would be seeing. Of course, they were invited by Turkish people who had with whom they had decent relations, and they somewhat trusted them, but still they had this question in mind, what is going to happen to us if we go to Turkey? At the very least, maybe they were expecting some kind of confrontation as being Christians coming to Turkey. But on the contrary, I guess they were quite happy, and they were impressed by the hospitality of Turkish people and how open-minded they were. And they were really, it was really a paradigm shift, I guess, for them. Going to Turkey as an experience was very different for them in that case.
And Aziz, what about for you? When have you had acquaintances or friends who visited your country who had some important things to learn visiting Uzbekistan, which is also a predominantly Muslim country?
Yes, actually a lot of American people who went to Uzbekistan, who visited my city, they were really, I mean, they had a really different expectation. Some of them had no expectations at all because our country is not very, very popular in the world. But when they would come and they would learn so many things about our culture and about Islam as a religion and Islam as the way of life in our country, they would be amazed. And I think it is important to establish these bridges and to focus more on common things rather than trying to find a few differences and trying to have debates on them. Because I think the dialogue between people should not be for the sake of somebody's ego, but should be more focused on enabling the truth to appear. And, you know, for the truth to emerge, I think such principles as mutual understanding and respect and, you know, dedication to justice, they cannot be ignored. And it is really important, I think.
Since we don't have listeners calling on this program, since it was pre-recorded, some of our listeners might want to ask a question about women in Islam. As you're both males, clearly, but Barak was just mentioning a woman professor who visited Turkey and was perhaps hesitant to go because of things she'd heard about how there's not much freedom for women in some of the Muslim countries. Are women educated, able to be educated equally with men in Uzbekistan?
Yes, they do.
And are women able to, you know, we hear stories in this country, well, women aren't even allowed to drive in Saudi Arabia or someplace. What about in your countries?
No, women are able to drive and they receive education and they have the same rights as men do. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to talk about the role of women in our organization. Especially wives of members who are from Turkey, they also participate actively in, in making different decisions and in organizing different events. And the event we are planning to organize, we actually sent a proposal for a workshop which is going to which will hopefully take place at the University High during the Agora Days. This will be closer to the end of February. And hopefully some of our women there are going to show lots of things about culture, many cultural peculiarities, which they are pretty ancient, but they are still practiced both in Turkey and in Uzbekistan too.
What about women in Turkey, Barak?
I would say the same things, that they have equal rights with men, and well, they can do almost anything that men can do.
Would a woman from a Western country who's walking down the street in a short skirt, short sleeve blouse, be harassed?
Not for, not obeying the rules of Islam. No. Mm-hmm. Actually, you would see a lot of Turkish people who are dressed up such. Uh-huh. So.
And what about the opposite of that in terms of women? Do many women who visit Turkey from other countries feel safer there because of the respect for women that's in Islam?
I can liken this to my case, that I came to United States and I didn't have any negative experiences about being a Muslim. But if I went to somewhere else, some other place, that could happen. So sure. That depends on where they go and what kind of people they meet,
sure.
I would say.
We're down to our last 30 seconds or so. Any last thing you'd like to tell people about the Intercultural Friendship Foundation?
We just hope that all the things that we have in mind that we are planning to organize in the following in this year and in the following years, I hope this will make people closer to each other, especially in our community, and to raise cross-cultural understanding, and hope people will learn the importance of dialogue and will know more about culture of our countries and about Islam.
Do you have a website?
We do have a website.
We do have a website. Mm-hmm. If you, people go to UIUC website and search for IFF, I guess they'll come across our website.
For Intercultural Friendship Foundation. I want to thank our guest today, Aziz Yoldashev, a master's student, and Barak Okumish, a PhD student in biophysics, for talking with us today. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program, Keeping the Faith. Next week on Keeping the Faith, January 22nd, our guest will be Professor Chris Moyer, talking about architectural building projects in Africa. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Do animals have culture? Well, the orangutans of Sumatra certainly do, and what's more, they've passed on this knowledge to their offspring. Now scientists think these primates may offer insights into our own cultural evolution. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, what other primates reveal about ourselves? It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. Next time on PRI's The World, Ernest Hemingway's home in Havana is crumbling. Cuban and American preservationists want to save it, but their efforts are drawing fire from some Americans. Catch the first of Lisa Mullen's stories from Cuba and the day's news next time on The World, Monday at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. here on AM 580 WILL Urbana. We're broadcasting from Campbell Hall for Public Telecommunication, thanks to the generosity of Alice and Robert Campbell. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s and south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of light rain, the high in the lower 50s with south winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of light rain. The low in the mid-30s with west winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.